We're already humming along here in fourth gear. Joined by my good friend Ralph Peters, Fox News military analyst, retired lieutenant colonel, author of several bestsellers, including the acclaimed Civil War novel Caine at Gettysburg. Very timely here, this being President's Day. Ralph Peters, in the New York Post late last week, wrote the single best piece I have read on sequestration, which would be the automatic budget cuts coming in early March if the president and Congress can't agree on other places to cut. He said the looming budget sequestration imposes $50 billion in cuts on the defense budget this year. It's a terrible idea. I am for it. He says, as I've watched the Defense Department pull shameful stunts and listened to congressional blather attempting to block sequestration, this defense hawk has become one irate taxpayer. Ralph Peters, again, sticking around with us here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Ralph, just a few minutes ago, you told us about some of the shameful stunts the Defense Department was pulling. And you also critiqued congressional case against it, a report called What Sequestration Really Means from the House Armed Services Committee.
Yeah, I mean, it was so full of lies and half-truths. You know, the Congress isn't the answer here. Unfortunately, Congress is the problem because Congress allocates the money. And even though, and look, anybody who's ever served in the military for more than a day has seen plenty of waste. And look, you and I have talked for years, John. I think I have unimpeachable credentials as wanting a strong defense.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But as a taxpayer and as a former soldier who cares about those still in uniform, I don't want waste. I want efficiencies. I want the taxpayer and the troops in the field to get our money's worth. And right now, they do not.
Now, in a second, I'm going to ask you specifically what you would do, how you would resolve the defense spending crisis. Okay, so I'm going to advance warning. Sure. I'll put you on the spot for that in a minute. Before we get there, you say that there's four bogus claims being made about defense spending.
Right. Well, in this op-ed piece, committee paper, well, they just claim that, well, what if sequester goes through, we'll have the smallest army since before World War II. Well, that's bogus because we're going to have the smallest army anyway because nobody in the Capitol, virtually nobody in Capitol Hill really cares about the troops. Congressmen, senators, they love to pose for photo ops of the troops. But when it comes time to vote, they will screw the troops over to keep 10 wasteful, worthless jobs in their home district. And so and defense industry has been brilliant about, it's terribly inefficient, it violates economic rules, but they've, defense industry, the big titans, have dispersed jobs and research centers and distribution centers and parts suppliers around virtually every congressional district in the country. So in order to vote against waste, the tremendous waste in some of the Defense Department programs, the congressmen and congresswomen have to vote against, to lose jobs in their district. I mean, it's defense industry, the titan defense industry, realized a generation ago that they don't have to defeat America's enemies. They just have to win on Capitol Hill. And it's a wildly corrupt system. So we're going to have the smallest army anyway because Congress is going to sacrifice any number of soldiers and Marines to preserve junk contracts in their home districts. Now, the second point is we'll have the smallest Navy since before World War II. Well, yes, we will, because the Navy has chosen to go with a smaller number of large, very expensive ships. They're pushing $5 billion for an aircraft carrier raw off the slips. And so that's been a Navy choice. I personally believe, former Army guy, I believe the U.S. Navy is our premier strategic service. I want a bigger Navy. But to have a bigger Navy, you've got to cut the waste. You've got to get the spending under control. Third point the paper made, we'll have the smallest fighter air force force in the Air Force since before World War II. Well, again, it's a matter of choice. If you want to build fighters that, by the way, don't work, like the F-22, and cost $200 million apiece, guess what? You are going to have a smaller air force. And the last point was, oh, well, we're going to have the smallest civilian workforce for DOD. Since in its history. Well, first of all, I don't believe that figure. I'd have to see the math. But it is smaller than it might be because Congress went in for this orgy of outsourcing giving us inferior services at inflated costs. Outsourcing was supposed to save money, provide better services. It rarely has done so. It's been another budget swindle. So I am sick to death. I mean, that's what turned me against us. I say, let sequester happen. Let these congressmen who voted for it, confident it would go through, they cynically voted for it. Now let them suck it up.
All right. Now, one of the things you pointed out by way of comparison, during the Korean conflict, our top fighter was the F-86D Sabre. It cost about $4 million in current dollars.
Yeah, actually under $4 million in current dollars.
Okay.
In today's dollars. It was $343,000 in 1953 dollars.
Okay. So today, the F-22 is running about $200 million a copy. $200 million a copy versus $4 million.
Yeah, and with downstream costs included, the actual price tag for the F-22 is $350 million a copy. And guess what? It's been in the inventory for going on a decade. It has not flown a single combat mission because it's such a mess. They've even had trouble with the oxygen system and pilots blacking out. It's a piece of junk. And you know what? Lockheed Martin wasn't penalized. We have no lemon law that really matters. And Lockheed Martin's penalty for the junk piece of crap, the F-22, that cost $200 million a piece, was to get an even larger contract for the F-35 fighter, which is also in trouble in development. And you know, the F-25 life cycle, F-35 projected life cycle costs are going to run between a low of $1 trillion and a high of $1.5 trillion in life cycle costs. And, you know, wow. All I ask is, if you're going to pay $1.5 trillion for a fighter, it would be nice if it worked.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you this there. We have several minutes left. You've critiqued, I think, persuasively what is wrong with the current culture when it comes to defense spending, that it's all about contractors, not about the troops. And that they're not held accountable for poor work. So let me ask you, what would you do to revamp defense spending in the Pentagon?
Well, I've got three straightforward rules. But first let me say that I am not against profits. I am a capitalist, but I am against dishonest profits. I want defense industry to give good value to the taxpayer and our troops. That's all. They're welcome to make big profits, but give us weapons that work at a fair price. Now, what would I do? Three rules. One, we need a strict lemon law for defense industry. And by the way, contracts are enforced. Penalties are enforced against the little guys in the defense industry that are trying hard, but the big guys never get seriously punished.
Okay.
So rule number one, a lemon law that when a big defense contractor gives us a piece of junk, they don't get paid. In fact, they pay penalties.
Okay.
Number two, you need a law that forbids senior generals and admirals from going to work for the defense industry after they retire. You must have that, because you never hear senior generals or admirals speaking out against the corruption and the weapons that don't work for two reasons. One is there's this "you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours" deal. The Army doesn't criticize the Air Force because the Army doesn't want the Air Force criticizing the Air Force criticizing the Army, and they all play along and don't criticize each other's waste. I'd like to see a cat fight, but that's reason one. Reason two is, sadly, some of our senior officers are more focused on these incredibly lucrative retirement jobs with the defense industry as vice presidents, automatically become a vice president, sit on a number of boards, and these guys already have six-figure pensions. They talk patriotism, but they go along with this profit-seeking system that, again, screws the taxpayer and screws the troops. So that's two things, a lemon law and a law forbidding senior, say, 2-, 3-, and 4-star generals, or even just 3- or 4-star generals and admirals from ever working for defense industry.
Okay.
The third point you need is you need a law, and this will never happen, that members of Congress must recuse themselves from any vote that affects defense industry located in their home district. In other words, if jobs are on the line in your home district or investments in your home district, when it comes to defense, because it's about our national defense, you can't vote on that. You don't get a vote. And, of course, it won't happen because if you did implement, it won't happen because Congress will never discipline itself, but also because there'd be about a half dozen congressmen left.
I was going to say that that's the whole strategy of the Pentagon is to put a little something in just about every district.
The strategy of the defense industry, And it's really, you can see how it's such a corrupt system.
Or the defense industry, yes.
Yeah, where Congress is scamming us, defense industry is scamming us, and too many generals and admirals have their eye on the big retirement jobs, and the result is the taxpayer gets screwed, and the troops don't get what they really need.
Now, what about
it's not right.
Now, Ralph Peters, what about the argument that, well, by having a well-placed admiral or well-placed general as vice president in charge of procurement at a particular defense contractor, you will have that kind of know-how, that that kind of, you know, street smart, here is what the military really needs.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the biggest lies ever told. I always hear that from defense industry. They go to the Hill for these show hearings, and they'll say, well, we need the expertise these men have. Now, if you want expertise, you hire the colonels and the warrant officers and the chief petty officers and the senior NCOs. They have the expertise. What the senior generals and admirals have are connections and influence. It is a woefully corrupt system, and you know, I despair of it ever changing. And that's, again, what I want sequester to go through, because I want the bad guys, the corrupt defense industry, to feel some pain. And, you know, I don't want any honest worker to lose his or her job. I don't want furloughs for honest federal workers. But at some point, we've got to say, stop, this can't go on, because we can't afford a $650 billion in defense spending every year, and we don't have to. John, we could have a stronger national defense for less money if somebody on Capitol Hill would show some sense of ethics.
You know, something. First of all, I think we've just outlined your next book. Because
I
think
someone
needs to write this book. Someone needs to say this out loud in the kind of coherent, comprehensive form that you've just displayed here in the last few minutes. The second thing, last question here, do you think that our defenses in the 21st century are simply overextended? As an example, do we really need to have, 18,000 troops in Korea?
Well, no, we probably don't, but there are things I'd cut first, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's part of the keeping troops overseas is to preserve the force, because every time you train troops home, Congress uses it as an excuse to cut troops and give more money to defense industry.
Right.
And it's bipartisan. Republicans and Democrats. Rumsfeld wanted to cut two army divisions, said we don't need ground troops. This is back in 2001. We don't need ground troops. High tech will do it all. Then we go to Iraq, and guess what? We've got a shortage of ground troops.
Right.
I say again, there is no constituency for the soldier, sailor, airman, or Marine. The congressmen love the photo ops with them.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes time to vote, they will vote for wasteful defense industry jobs, and they'll vote for what I call legal corruption, no matter how many troops they have to cut. And by the way, you always hear about, well, we'll lose jobs in the defense industry. My God, we're talking about losing 1,000 to 200,000 jobs of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. We're the best troops in the world. We're going to put them out on the street to save profits for Lockheed Martin? Come on. I don't believe that's patriotic. I believe it's stupid.
Ralph Peters, always great having you here telling the straight truth on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Like I said, I'm serious. I think you've just outlined your next book.
Yeah, John, I've been saying these things for two decades. It doesn't make a dent, because in Washington, it's all about the money.
But the thing is, if the money runs out, then they'll have no choice.
There you go.
You know what they say? That you can always count on them doing the right thing once they have nothing else to do, once they have no other choices.
Yeah. Well, so, just remember, you know, in these difficult economic times, there's not a single retired general or admiral on food stamps.
Ralph Peters, Fox News military analyst here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thanks again, Ralph.
Always a pleasure, John.